shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The Talk of the Town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra.
Bedtime turns me off and I don't mean maybe.
Welcome to the Nocturnal Journal for this Saturday night, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. And we have a very fine musical show tonight. In the 10 o'clock hour, we have our good friend Paul Sebar playing live in the studio. We may have a surprise guest from Washington, D.C., who performed Thursday night. So stay tuned for that. We got our friend Bill Dahl, who wrote a great book about blues album covers. And we're beginning the segment with our friend Dave Crane of Dave's Records. Just we're all Dave all the time.
Just another Dave. We're in that demographic where Dave was a popular name.
Thanks for joining us, Dave. Dave's Records is at 2604 North Clark. And Dave, you see me. Now, I live over by Humboldt Park, Ukrainian Village. So, again, at my age, to come see you is about a 45-minute time commitment. But you're
You can come by anytime. I have people come by all the time. It's like, I'm so sorry I haven't been in so long. It's like, it's okay. You can stop by anytime. It's fine.
But I'll tell you, you're my go-to guy when I need a vinyl fix. I mean, you just saw me a couple weeks ago. I saw Patti Smith, and kind of eccentric. I couldn't find my Patti Smith vinyl, so I had to have it right away, so I came and saw you. When Merle Haggard died, I wanted to update my Merle Haggard vinyl collection. So tell us a little bit about the story. And you and I were talking last time I was in there. I just think it's fascinating. You've been in that neighborhood so long.
I have. I mean, when I started, I felt like we were a newer place. It was originally a place called Secondhand Tunes. I worked for the original owner, Jim Mayersey. And I started in 85 in the neighborhood, and the store actually opened in the neighborhood in 1977. So, it's 40 years,
almost,
I guess.
40 years. Now, is it always, you're all vinyl. Has it always
been
vinyl?
It's all vinyl. It kind of the history of how that happened as all vinyl is Jim initially was looking for a bigger space on Clark Street. And we were originally half a block down at 2550 North Clark. Now we're at 2604 North Clark. So what he did was, instead of getting one place, he got a second place up the block. And he was trying to figure out what to do with the stores. And it's like, well, we'll make one the low-end store, and it'll all have CDs, cassettes, and vinyl. And I was like, that's just going to be too confusing for people. And at that point in time, which was probably the late 80s, early 90s, it just made more sense to break it down by format. So we made 2604 North Clark, which is my store, the all vinyl half, and then the CD half was half a block down. And then later he got the store right next door, and so the CD half was next door and the vinyl half was right next door.
You're all vinyl now. Your inventory, ballpark, what do you got in terms of LPs, 45s?
It's roughly about 50,000 different titles of LP 45, 78. We have some 78s, not that many, but we still have some 78s as well.
And when I do come in there, I see it's always pretty crowded.
It is. Well, you can come in anytime. People come in all the time, and sometimes you can come in on a busy Saturday and nobody's in at the moment. People are like, are you doing okay? There's hardly anybody in here. It's like there are plenty of moments like that, but we do traffic in a lot of people.
And, I mean, everybody knows that there's an upswing in vinyl. When did you see that start to happen?
Well, like, it's been going on a long time. I've seen it, actually, the upswing in vinyl probably actually started happening a lot earlier than people think, which is, I think it's closer to 20 to 25 years ago is
really
when it actually started. When I looked at the industry figures, and you can look at charts of it now, and it's kind of interesting to see where the rise and fall of the cassette taking over from vinyl, vinyl dipping down to like next to nothing in the early 90s. But at that time, I remember like in 1993 when Pearl Jam Versus came out, they made a big pitch to put the vinyl out ahead of the CD. And we had this huge response. I hadn't seen anything sell on a new piece like that at that time. And I kept seeing it increasing, but the industry kept saying, oh, well, vinyl's dying. When is it going to be gone? When is it going to be gone? But that's the initial start. And then as the early 2000s happened, what happened is kids started coming in the door, whereas in the late 80s, early 90s, they go, oh, it's just records, walk right back out. And then I started having kids coming in and going, oh, wow, it's only vinyl. That's so cool. I'm getting my first turntable. So really the growth in vinyl for us has really been the younger kids taking to vinyl and seeing it as a virtual physical thing in their virtual world. And I think that's the appeal of it.
I mean, backing up to something you said, the industry, you know, was writing off vinyl. Was that dictated by the industry? I mean, even back when I was at Sun Times, I mean, I'd get the CDs coming in, and I'm not even an audiophile, but I never got rid of my vinyl because I just liked the total sound of vinyl and stuff. So where was that coming from, the anti-vinyl movement?
I think the industry figures always tracked like SoundScan. So it was tracking at the bigger places where they were dumping vinyl. So little stores like us, little mom and pop indie stores here and there, we weren't really tracked. It's not like, you know, they weren't tracking it at the distributor number. So that's what I was always seeing, this growth in vinyl, but I didn't understand why I wasn't seeing that in the figures reflected there, because I didn't know where they were necessarily measuring it from, whether it was at the distributor where, you know, they send it to first, or whether they're selling it at when it gets sold at the register and scanned. And if you didn't have the scan thing, it's not getting registered. Uh-huh. So
that's interesting. Now, when I was in there a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the neighborhood. I'm going to close my. Tell me what the neighborhood was like in the late 70s and early to mid 80s, and how has it changed?
Well, it's, you know, it used to be a much more low rent place. I mean, a lot of the stores that are now, you know, sports bars and you know, a Banana Republic just opened up and Target's there now. I mean, where the Target is, it used to be the CTA bus barn.
I do remember that.
But I mean, so that's the kind of neighborhood it was, where you would put the bus barn. Now it's $1 million condos. So, but you know, it's mostly antique shops and resale shops, divey bars, you know, a little of this, a little of that. And like when I first started in 1985, you could walk from Coconuts, which was at the corner of Diversey, and then when Tower opened up a few years later down at the other end, and there were six record stores within walking distance, all on that street. You know,
now Tower Records, when did they open roughly?
You know, I want to say they opened probably really late in Chicago. They were looking. They were looking for a space in Chicago for a long time, and they always prided themselves on picking a space. And I think they picked like one of the worst spaces they could have picked.
Is it the corner? I don't even know the.
It was on Webster and Clark Street.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and they actually built that space, and you know, it was just bad because you know you had to walk upstairs to get into it. I mean, and it was a great record store, but I think it probably opened, I'm guessing, about 1992, 1993, okay, something like that. And I remember when they were opening, people used to come down to me, oh, are you really worried Tower's
that's
coming
right.
in? Are you really worried Tower's coming in? But that's not the kind of business that we compete against. I mean, we're a broad base. We carry, you know, new and used and a variety of different styles and types. We don't always have just the hot thing, you know.
I think I was telling you, again, now I have to think about the years. It had to be 84, 85, maybe even earlier than that. I was waiting to move into my place, my first place in Ukrainian Village. And I had to stay for a month. We were late on the closing. We had to stay for a month in the Covenant Hotel.
Nice.
Then that's a flop house. That's a men's only residence, right?
It is.
How far is that from your
It's probably like two blocks up.
And they're still there.
It's still there.
And that back from that era, did you get any customers like that from that neighborhood, or was it a destination point?
Well, I mean, you know, the neighborhood actually has a lot of characters.
Yeah, it still does.
You know, there's a halfway house down the block, straight down Wrightwood. So we've always had, and I don't know if I personally attract very colorful people, let's say.
Yeah, yeah. So, but you still have that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
What are people looking for now in terms of vinyl? Genre and artists and stuff?
You know, I think it, you know, really with vinyl, I mean, the bulk of what we sell is rock stuff. But we also have a really big classical bunch of people that come through. You know, we have a large, you know, used classical section. You know, and, you know, we have, you know, a lot of jazz and soul and hip-hop. And, I mean, we sell a little bit of everything. So there's not one thing that kind of drives us. And I think that's also, you know, I kind of created a record store that I liked. That's the kind of record store I liked. It's like you could, you know, you could find a Sammy Davis Jr. record, you could find an X-Ray Specs record, you know.
You sold me a Frank Theron record when I was in there.
I did sell you a Frank Theron
record. It was in my collection. So we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. I want to talk, when we come back, a little bit about your entry into the whole music business, music around the house and stuff like that. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal.
That's Buddy Rich. Hear my voice where you are. Take a train. Steal a car, hop a freight, grab a star, come back to me. Catch a plane, catch a breeze, on your hands, on your knees.
Welcome back to WGN's Nocturnal Journal with our guest Dave Crane. That's so Nocturnal Journal on a Saturday night. That's Sammy Davis Jr. and Buddy Rich, Baby Come Back to Me.
Absolutely.
Dave, I asked you to pick some songs. You picked that. Why'd you pick that?
Well, I picked that because I'm a huge Sammy Davis Jr.
So am I.
And I started getting into it a long time ago. I used, like, growing up, I'd see him on the shows and thought he was kind of like, you know, a joke at the time. But I actually think he's one of the great singers of all time. And that particular record with Buddy Rich is a great record.
Where'd that come from? What record is it?
It's called The Sound of 66. It's on Reprise back when Sinatra on the label, and you know they were putting out records left and right, and so it's just a great record. You know, it's real live and upbeat, and that's I got into it kind of ironically with that, you know, Sammy Davis singing the theme from Shaft, which on his album is called John Shaft.
Yeah, right.
If you haven't heard that, check it out. It's a great it's a great record as well. But I mean, I'm serious. I do like Sammy Davis, so that's why
so
I threw
I.
that in there.
Yeah, we saw a lot. Now, what about Buddy Rich? What do you know about Buddy? We were talking off the air there.
Well,
he was a colorful character.
Well, colorful in the sense of a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anybody liked Buddy, and that's why those tapes of him just flipping out. You know, the guys in the band put that out. You know, and they used to trade tapes like that around of people just like losing it and stuff because he was just such a taskmaster and a jerk.
Yeah. So there was. Should I tell you my joke?
Sure.
I don't like tell jokes on the air, but so Buddy Rich's bass player calls Buddy Rich's wife and says, "Is Buddy there?" And she goes, "No. Buddy passed away a couple weeks ago." And he goes, "Okay, all right." So then he waits. A couple weeks later, calls back and goes, "Is Buddy Rich there?" And Buddy Rich's wife says, no, Buddy passed away a few weeks ago. He goes, all right. And he goes one more week. He goes, calls back. He goes, is Buddy Rich there? And she goes, I told you he's dead. And she goes, I just wanted to hear that again. Not a popular guy. So these tapes were going around, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just like the tape of Elvis breaking up. You know, in concert of Can't Help Falling in Love, where he just keeps keeps laughing. I mean, you know, those kind of things got traded underground for a long time, and occasionally they made, you know, tapes that floated around or CDs that floated around of that stuff, or records, you know, bootleg records or whatever.
You have that record you've just played. Is that in stock?
I don't have it in stock at the moment. I wish I did, but I don't. But we will at someday.
And give us
as
all
records.
Yeah, so that's a good way to put in the address and the website and all that stuff.
Yeah. We're just at 2604 North Clark, and if you want to check us out online on all that social media, you can check out the Twitter feed, you can check out the Instagram feed, check out our Facebook page. Lots of people seem to enjoy my Twitter feed, so hopefully you will too.
Yeah,
it's just
Dave's
Record Shy.
Yeah, I look at that. Our friend Chris Legan, he's been on the show. And he, you know, when I'm thinking about that track we just played, he came on and we did a whole thing on Supper Club music. And I think when I'm in there, I always kind of ask you where that type of stuff is. Not Exotica or a lot, but like Supper Club music, nightclub music and stuff. That's why I like the Frank Theron thing. I don't know if that was done at Mr. Kelly's, but
right.
Do you have genres like that?
Well, we have some catch-all. You can always ask me if you're looking for those things. I mean, we have like an oddities section that just has, you know, oddball stuff, you know, ventriloquist records, you know, like Jimmy, I forget what his name is. Jimmy whoever and Farfel, and you know, where you too can be can be a ventriloquist. I mean, we have sections like that as well. So and we have a celebrity section with you know oddball celebrity records of the times, like John Travolta singing or whatever. You know, like today I sold a record of I put some things down there like Sergeant Barry Sadler, Ballad of the Green Berets.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah. That type of thing.
Did you ever think about moving? Why are you loyal to that one spot?
It's a good spot. You know, some things karmically are just a good spot. I mean, the original owner, Jim, did a good job of picking spots. There's a lot of foot traffic there. We have a lot of history there. Just a story about moving. I can tell you this is how hard it is to move. Hi-Fi Records, which used to be down a block from us, they expanded into a second space. And, you know, at one point they had to close up their one space, which was just, you know, the closest space to our store. And it's only a quarter of a block down. People would walk by and see the empty space and not walk the extra 3 feet to mm-hmm. see the other half of it that was still open. And they'd walk back to me, what happened to second? What happened to Hi-Fi Records? They're closed.
Yeah.
So that really taught me a lot about, you know, how quickly people can forget about you if they see an empty space. So it would take a lot of effort to, you know, another part of the city might be cheaper. It might be give us a bigger space or a better space. But, you know, we've been working this small, tiny space forever, and I know how to work it. But sometimes you pay a lot extra to get people to know that you moved. Although that might change nowadays with social media, whereas younger kids would go, oh, it's still on the Twitter feed. It's still on the Instagram. It's still on the Facebook. I can see they actually did move. They're still there. They still exist.
What was your introduction into music? I don't know much about your background. Are you from around here?
I grew up in LaGrange. I went to LT. Go Lions. And, you know, I started high school in 1973. So I was a kid. I was a nerdy kid. I was a comic book kid. And, you know, I just listened to the radio. I listened to WCFL. I got all the surveys.
Yeah, so did I.
It's really cool because those are all online now. So if you ever want to see what, you know, what was on the top of the charts in 73, you know, when you were in high school, it's like, oh, it's amazing when you look at all those charts from the era where I was growing up, because there was just such a broad base of music. You know, there could be everything from, you know, the OJs to, you know, it was just such a broader time of music and one-hit wonders.
You'd have Nancy Sinatra and Sugartown.
Exactly. So I listened to a lot of music, but I didn't actually get my first. I actually started with a cassette player. Being an all vinyl guy, that's an admission I have to make. I had my Aqualung cassette in those hard cases where you had to stick them in there. But then I think maybe when I was 15, I got my first turntable from Pacific Stereo. We all remember Stereo as a lovely place. The first setup I got within the year, the internals of it melted 3 times and I had to get it replaced. So, but I liked records, and I liked hanging out at our local record store in town. Was a place called Swollen Head Records.
I remember Swollen, yeah.
And it was kind of a, you know, I always had to give my mom a list at Christmas time to go in and tell, so she could get in quickly and get out, because it's like they had the waterbeds and blacklight posters in the basement and all the head shop stuff. And so that was my initial getting into records, but I just started collecting them. And then when I went off to college, I went to U of I, and that was the era where you brought your stereo, you know, and you brought your big speakers and you set them there. And I had a larger collection than most people. I mean, I had a couple of hundred records, which now I think, oh, that's not that much, but went off to college with those. And I went and I studied psychology. So I got my degree in psychology, and, I hung around Champaign after I was done with school, and I was working at a Greek restaurant, Zorba's, down there, and just hanging out. And then when I moved back up here, I got a job with Musicland at Woodfield.
Okay, you want to hang around?
Sure.
Ride shotgun. We're going with Bill Dahl,
absolutely,
because he's got a book about record albums, blues record albums and stuff. So
sure.
Yeah, why don't you hang on? So we're going to be back with Bill Dahl and Dave Crane, Dave's Records, 2604 North Clark. We'll be back after the news on WGN's Nocturnal Journal.